Welcome to 10 Bestest,
where we sift through the noise so you don't have to.
Each week we share our 10 favorite things of the moment.
Anything goes. Welcome everybody. I'm Brian Hart.
I'm Karen McFarlane Holman.
And here we go with another great episode of 10 Bestest.
Woohoo!
And it's my turn to go first. Here we go. My first cool sheet is a website slash app, and it's called Goodreads. So this is, surprisingly, we haven't talked about it. It's kind of the go-to website app for reading. Think of it kind of as Facebook, only just for reading. It's just a Bookshare. It's the world's largest site for readers and book recommendations. Their mission is to help find and share books that people love. It was launched in 2007, which actually surprises me because it's so established that I feel like it's been around forever, that it's just since the beginning of the internet. But why I like it so much is it's a great place to communicate with friends about a specific topic of a book or just what you're reading. You know, Facebook and all these other social platforms, they do a lot. They're good for sharing a lot of information. This is hyper-focused just for books, which I really like. Sometimes it's good just to do one thing, and when you do it well, it's really cool. And I always knew about it, but I never really gave it a time of a day. But I really wanted to focus on reading more books this year. So it's a really good way to, you can put like what's on your shelf, what you're want to read in the future. And then so you're constantly kind of looking at that. Then you talk about what book you're currently reading, your progression. And once you start sharing that with your friends, you get a little bit motivated of like, oh, they're reading this book. And you can click, oh, I want to maybe read that book in the future. And then so it's a really good way to discover books with your friends. And also it has you set, if you want, a yearly goal. And it'll say like, oh, I want to read 10 books this year, 12 books this year, 52 books this year, 100 books this year. And then it will tell you as you read, you are this close to your goal, this percentage, you're 5 books ahead of your reading goal, which is cool. It does help me actually motivate and read more books and find out what my friends are reading, which then you have more conversation. You can talk about them. And I think it's really cool. Check out Goodreads.
Nice. You know, I belong to it and I just have not used it.
Yeah, I was like that for years, for a long time. And then I would dabble. And then like, so when I looked at it, it was funny. It was like, I'm currently reading this book I was reading in 2010 or whatever.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, I didn't even finish that book. I don't know. I tried to look you up just the other day, but I wasn't.
Yeah.
I didn't know for sure. So we'll have
let's do that.
Yeah. I didn't put in your email. I think that's the quicker way to do it.
Right.
But yeah, it is. It's really cool. It's just, you know, and it's motivating when your friends are reading books. You're like, wow, they've already read 5 books this year. I better get to it or something. I don't know. Yeah. A little competition, a little bit just seeing what your friends are up to and reading is really cool.
Yes.
I just like it.
Once you find someone who you like their taste, you can tell you have similar tastes, then you can inspire each other. So that's pretty great.
And it has so many features that I didn't even scratch the surface on and I still haven't explored. So it's a robust site for sure. It's a good, really good place to pick up book quotes if you're looking for quotes of a certain certain books. Mm-hmm. They have a really good way to, they categorize that and catalog it. So that's really cool too.
All right. I am freshly motivated. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. And you can find out about that and all of our other show notes by going to 10bestest.com/reads for Goodreads.
Excellent.
And all of our other cool sheets.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks.
You're welcome.
I'm going to launch into my next cool sheet. This is, for me, it didn't directly come from Queen's Gambit, which Brian talked about 10 episodes ago in episode 170. But I had learned chess when I was young, and then I had gotten reinterested in it right around Queen's Gambit. And then I actually tried to get my kids a set for Christmas, and I couldn't because Queen's Gambit had gotten so huge, they were essentially all gone. And I have embarked into the world of online gaming with chess at chess.com. And I love it. I cannot believe how much better it is than I thought it would be. So they just have a lot of different resources there. And one of them, of course, is lessons. And I remembered all the general rules, but just getting some lessons of, oh, what do these different moves called like general like series of moves. And so they'll show you in a short video and then they'll give you little quizzes to make sure you learned it. They let you try again. They also, I love the puzzles section because they'll just give you like, here's a setup, like in the middle of a game. And they're like, what would you do? What's the best move? I love those. That's super cool. There's also live streams of actual chess championships happening. So I actually watched part of one this morning. I caught it near the end. So it was kind of like the exciting, like everyone's freaking out, like, oh my God, what are they going to do? And so that was actually fun. And then you can find people online and play with them. And so I've done that a few times as well. And you can set that up. So you have a timer that's 10 minutes, like, okay, we're going to play a 10-minute game. So it doesn't have to go on and on. That's fun as well. For budding chess players out there, I highly recommend chess.com.
Oh, this is so cool. I still haven't learned chess. I've talked about Queen's Gambit and another chess video, I believe. I've always been fascinated with chess and I still haven't learned. So maybe I need to finally go to that
try
site.
It. At least, yeah, give
learn
it a try.
At least learn the basic principles, things like that.
Yeah.
I did hear about, I don't know if this is true, like a super hack if you're not good at chess or whatever. Is that you can play online with somebody and then set up another, let them be white, let them go first, and then set up another game on chess.com and you do their moves and you let the computer be the other one and then you know how to counter the person and always win.
So, that's hilarious.
So there's your bonus cool cheat hack. If you don't know how to play chess and you just want to whoop your friends. I gotta imagine that would work because computers like never lose, right?
You know what though? I have someone I play that I always lose to, and I might do that as a practical joke.
You should
joke.
Do it.
That would be so funny. Okay.
Let me know how that goes.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. And there's also an app version. So you can play on your computer or just pull out your phone and do a little bit there. And yeah, it's really great.
That's cool. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
And let me know how that game goes.
I will.
All right. My next cool cheat is a YouTube channel. And oh my gosh, I love this channel so much. It is called Twins the New Trend. This YouTube channel has 768,000 subscribers, over 1,200 videos. They do reactions, vlogs, pranks, and much more. The YouTube channel features twin brothers, Tim and Fred Williams. They live in Gary, Indiana. And what they've kind of became famous for is their react videos. And especially they react to songs they've never heard before. And what I love about them, which is true with a lot of people, is someone might see them and kind of form an opinion on maybe their musical tastes or their favorite genre. You know, these are two young black kids in their 20s. They have tattoos on their arms. And, you know, you might just make a very wrong assumption that they like X kind of a music, but they listen and love all different kinds of genres, and their enthusiasm for this music is so genuine and pure and delightful that it's gotten them national attention. So they reviewed the song In the Air Tonight from 1981 in Phil Collins, and they lost their mind. So they were listening to it on YouTube and recorded their reaction live, but they just freaked out. They loved it so much. And I love it because they're just into it and they're like dancing and moving. And then they stop and they're like, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. What just happened? Like, did you hear those drums beat? And they're like, rewind that. And then they talk about it and then they freak out again. And it actually caused that song to be number 2 on iTunes 40 years after its release, after this video came out. It had over 6 million views. So they're becoming game changers. They're also their Dolly Parton, Jolene one is amazing. And Dolly Parton, Alicia Keys, and I think Annie Lennox all have like responded to their reaction videos because everybody, you just can't help but love these guys. Definitely check them out. Twins, the new trend.
I am going to love this.
Yes.
That is amazing.
I don't know how you could watch these videos and not love it.
Yeah.
It's just, but it is funny because again, even myself, I had kind of these, if I just would have saw these guys on the street, I just wouldn't have thought that they, you know, they listen to opera and country music and and, you know, R&B and hip hop and any other genre. And they just love it all. They just love good music. And they're so adamant and passionate and so delightful.
Oh,
and
amazing.
It's such a reminder that people are way deeper than you might first think.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, that's so true with so many different people. It's just so great. And they're so, you just can't help but smile when you watch them.
Oh,
their Jolene
fantastic.
One is so good too, with the Dolly Parton Jolene. It's just, they're all good, actually. They're all really good.
All right. I'm pulling it up right now. I will wait till the show's over listen. But
okay. I mean, I'd watch it with you. So
yeah. Oh, excellent. Thank you.
You're
fantastic.
Welcome.
Okay, my next cool sheet. Ooh, I love this one. I'm going to be talking about gorilla grafters. Okay, so if you're wondering what that means, I don't mean the gorilla like the animal, but the going out on the streets and making something happen. Okay, so in many, many cities, the city planners, they decide, all right, we want to have trees in these areas, and they plant a lot of trees. Well, if any of these trees are fruit or nut bearing, they always make sure that they are sterile. Part of that is it's messy when you have a fruit, you know, that's coming down, or and they're afraid of who knows what, you know, say an apple falls on someone's head or something, and then they discover gravity. Just kidding. But in any case, that is the standard, to have them be sterile. Okay, well, gorilla grafters, what they're doing is that they are going out and secretly grafting fruit-bearing branches onto city trees. And they're like, here we are in a big city, and here's a way to have food for people. And so why isn't this the case? So the very first time, this is a movement, and it started in 2012 in San Francisco. And so there are, in San Francisco alone, there's 10,000 fruit trees that don't bear fruit. And so this Tarahui decided, all right, let's do this, and let's get this going. And when they actually tried to get it, hey, let's ask the city, can we have more fruit-bearing trees? And when it wasn't getting anywhere, they were like, all right, let's take this matter into our own hands. And there's been all sorts of different cities this happening. There are Facebook groups. And I just love that name, Gorilla Grafters. It's so fantastic. And talk about like a force for good. So this article tells all about it if you want more information. Gorilla grafters secretly graft fruit-bearing branches onto sterile city trees.
Shook, shook. So cool. I love pretty much anything that's gorilla that doesn't hurt people or things.
Right, yes, exactly.
I am big into gorilla movements for sure. And it actually reminds me a lot about the gorilla gardener Ron Finley, who did a
yes.
really famous TED Talk. And he kind of was kind of the same thing. But he was talking about like full-on gardens, just planting gardens in the
That's
middle
so
of
great.
The urban city. And he's done that a lot all over. And yeah, I love it. And it is funny because it reminds me, I remember when I walked to the grocery store. If I go to Safeway, the one that's, you know, about a mile and a half away from my house, but it's one of the closer ones. And I remember seeing an apple tree and how that seems so out of place, because I didn't even realize that in my subconscious, when I think I'm downtown or in an urban environment, it seems so out of place to me. I'm used to seeing that in the countryside, and we live
right.
in Oregon, so that's not too far away from anywhere that we live in Oregon. And so, but yeah, I was like, why is this even weird? But now I know why. It's because by design, they're not putting fruit trees
exactly.
in urban areas. So that kind of just had this little epiphany while you were talking, which is really interesting, because I never really knew the reason behind it. You know, I kind of subconsciously knew it was happening.
Yeah.
And I'm with the gorillas. I think, screw that.
I mean,
more fruit everywhere.
I can see some of the reasons, but it just seems to me that then the city planners could work with people and say, okay, let's not have apple trees along this section.
Yeah.
Let's put them over here, you know, just putting them where it makes more sense.
Yeah. And just with food scarcity being such a thing, even in the United States, and we're one of the richest countries in the world, we got to start doing the opposite and having more available options versus less.
Like, yeah.
And yeah, we can work out somehow. And if not, the gorillas will take over and
That's right.
make it happen. I love it. All right. My next cool sheet is a podcast, and it is called Notable Nostalgia. This is personal to me because I know one of the creators, Allie. I have known her for quite a while. We've done projects together, Interactive Lebowski Festival, maybe was the first one. And then we did several other interactive movie, kind of like Rocky Horror Picture Show, only we did it for other movies, including Rocky Horror as well. And then Allie, we kind of lost touch a little bit, but we're still friends. And she started this podcast with a couple of her friends, Andy and Jeff, and it's all about the 90s, kind of pop culture in the 90s, TV shows, music, everything 90s. And, you know, I was born in 75, so sometimes I consider myself an 80s kid, but really I'm a 90s kid. That's when my kind of personality and my taste really started to solidify. And so everything 90s pop culture really resonates with me and is nostalgic. So I love this podcast so much. And I think even if you're not a 90s kid, if you just enjoyed the 90s for all that it was, sometimes very silly, sometimes really fantastic, I think you'll really like this podcast, and I really like it. They define themselves as three friends with marginalized voices that spend their formative years also in the 90s. So they have a little bit maybe of a different take on things that maybe other people might, because they can tell you kind of what was a little bit cringeworthy back in the 90s, or because obviously we're not as PC as we are now. We've definitely developed. So what ages well, what doesn't, how they felt about it back then, how they feel about it now. I think that's also a really cool take on what they're doing. And that just makes me love it even more. So it's not just that I know Allie, because that not alone would make a cool sheet, but it's because this podcast is so good. So if you love the 90s, check out Notable Nostalgia.
Oh, yeah. I'm all about the 90s, so I bet I will like this.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, you'll love it. Anybody, like I said, anybody that's lived in the 90s even would like it, because yeah, it'll take you back on memory lane.
Yeah, in fact, just the other day, I was just sitting there going, man, I loved the 90s.
That's like, funny.
Thinking about it.
There you go. Yeah, you gotta check it out.
Oh, fantastic. All right. My next cool sheet, I'm going to be talking about natural food coloring. All right. So I would say ever since I realized the day I realized that most food coloring is just completely man-made, synthesized, and it's like you look at the label and it says FD&C red number 4, whatever, I was like, that's weird. It always bothered me when things were like brightly colored unnaturally. So I was really excited when I first learned about these various ways of things that make color. But I also realized that when you do have a natural color, it does fade more quickly. But if you are making food, that's something that you are creating and then you're eating pretty soon thereafter. So you can actually make some really awesome natural food colors. And one of them is with red cabbage. Now, red cabbage, I first learned about because it's very awesome in terms of from a chemistry point of view. And it's something that we do a lot if you're doing something with elementary school kids and you're teaching them about things being acidic and stuff. You can do some really colorful things with red cabbage. And you can also use it in the kitchen to color things a certain way. So you could make cupcakes and you want to have them different frosting colors or something like that. You could take your red cabbage and just juice it. So you can just put in a blender and you're pretty much ready to go. And if you add just a little bit of lemon juice to one batch of it, you're going to get this beautiful pink color. And if you add just a touch of baking soda to one of them, you'll get a blue, and you can get a violet if it's in regular water. So it's really gorgeous. Another possibility for getting different colors is with a former cool sheet. This was episode, oh gosh, I think it was 40. It was Carly Wright when she was on with you, Brian. She talked about butterfly pea flower tea that changes color from blue to violet when you put in, again, if you put in some lemon juice. So there's another way. You can also do some stuff with blueberries and eggplants. And those are a little bit harder to extract, but these two that I mentioned first are super easy and very beautiful to make natural food coloring.
Oh, this is fascinating. So how do you get add cabbage to something and not have it taste like cabbage?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a method for that?
Right. So you would have to just use a small amount of it.
Okay.
And because it's so vibrantly colored, then, and especially if it was something like you can just color your sugar, like, you know, if you wanted to put sugar over it or a coconut or something as I want to use the word embellishment, but, you know, decoration,
yeah.
Then it's not going to be enough. But I totally hear you on that.
Okay. Well, that's really interesting. It also reminded me a certain coffee chain, very big one, got in trouble because they were using crushed beetles to make some of their drinks red, and they labeled it as vegan, and then they got busted. Yeah, not good. So apparently beetles make things red too, but maybe cabbage might be a better way to
go. Yeah, I think so.
especially if you're a vegan. Okay, thank you for sharing that. Don't forget that you can get all of our show notes on 10bestest.com/reads. So that would take you right to this episode. That's 10bestest.com/reads. And my next cool sheet is an Instagram account. It's really a person, but I follow him the most on Instagram because I like to see his work on Instagram. And his name is Kevin Perry. He has 1.1 million followers on Instagram, so apparently I'm not the only one that likes him. He is a stop motion and video wizard. So I have always been just really infatuated with the wonder of stop motion ever since I was a little kid. And when I was in fifth or sixth grade, a friend of mine had a class where we were going to do stop motion. It was like the best thing to ever happen to me. And for days, we did this really cool. I was into dinosaurs, of course, because I was, who isn't into dinosaurs when you're a young boy or girl? And we did this real elaborate story, and I remember like, oh, this is going to be so cool, and we're going to make this stop motion. And something happened, and the camera didn't work, and none of it was recorded, or we never got to see it. And I was crushed. It was like a childhood trauma for a while, so much so that it kind of altered my reaction to stop motion in a couple different ways. It still made me fascinated about it. I still thought it was magic because even I couldn't do it. And I had this mindset that I could never do stop motion. And then, of course, as you get older and you realize that that kind of mindset is completely baloney and you can do anything if you just learn how to do it and spend a lot of time, especially this day and age, it's so easy. But seeing Kevin Perry's videos really brought back that wonder, but also made me want to learn it. And he has actually a course as well that you can learn stop motion. I started buying some equipment now. I just need a camera lens and I'm good to go. I have all the other materials. I can't wait to start diving into stop motion. And if you want some inspiration or just to look at really cool stop motion movies, check out Kevin Perry.
Ooh, I'm going to share that with Dean. That's how he got started doing film, was doing stop motion
Little
Lego
dudes. I did not
know
that. That's so cool.
Yeah, he did a lot of Harry Potter spinoffs, little films, short films were his first ones. When he was 9 years old, maybe?
Yeah,
right around
the same age, maybe even a little bit younger. But yeah, I always wonder, it's one of those life moments where I was like, how would my life be different? Because I was it was one of the first things that I was ecstatic for.
Mm.
Like, I was like, this might be my, I didn't know what my calling was when I was in fifth grade. I didn't know what that meant. But I just remember being so passionate and so into it. And like, this is one of the best things I've ever done in grade school. Like, and then had that crushing defeat and watching other people's stop motion and ours didn't work whatever reason.
Yeah.
It really crushed me, but I'm really glad I didn't lose that sense of appreciation. It actually almost put it up on this pedestal, though, for me.
Oh, right.
Where I admired it still, but it was something I never thought I could do. And it took me, you know, a long time. Now I'm just now starting to get back into it. I've done little projects where I've done it before. But
yeah,
I can't wait to really dive in.
That's
bought like software and keyboard and a special equipment. And I'm like getting really into it now.
Very
so I can't
cool.
wait because it's such a cool form of expression and art.
Yeah. All right. I want to see your what you create.
Yeah, I can't wait. Get that camera lens. It's expensive, the one I want. So,
oh man. Well, speaking of film, my next cool sheet is a movie. And this movie was at Sundance in 2020 when I was there with my son Dean, but we did not see it then. So otherwise, maybe I would have talked about it when Brian and I did our Sundance special last year or in 2020 after Sundance. So what happened with this is then eventually, I guess it was right around Christmas, it got released and you can now rent it at the time of this recording. And it is called Promising Young Woman. And I decided to watch it because my son Dean did watch it a couple weeks ago and he said he highly recommended that I watch it. So I would say while I was watching it, I felt very uncomfortable and I would have loved to have seen it at Sundance when the writer director were there and they could speak of it. And one story I heard from Sundance is that when this was screened, I don't know which screening it was, if it was the first or not, that there was this fight that happened with people in the audience about a particular scene. And so the writer was like, wow, I knew this was powerful, but I didn't realize how powerful it was going to be. And to be causing these kinds of discussions and that people would become divisive over it. So very, very powerful. Now, I don't want to give too much away, but essentially what it does is it brings up, or it did for me, this pervasive issue that's in society where some men get caught up in the good old boys club and with predatory treatment of women. And so what this film did for me was it created this vehicle to think about where our society has been and where it is now, how to grapple with moral compass, and are there some cases where forgiveness is more difficult, and also the role that mental stability plays in people's lives when they are grappling with significant trauma. It, very well done, and it takes various turns. And like I said, I was not comfortable the whole time watching it, but in the end, I went, wow, this is powerful. This is a cool sheet. Promising Young Woman.
Wow, that's very cool. Yeah, sometimes the harder things are important.
Yeah.
You know, in many different ways to go ahead and challenge yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think I talked about that on the last episode with the book How to Be an Anti-Racist was kind of like that. Of it's, you know, it's the harder things, it kind of sometimes means it's important.
So absolutely.
That's cool. It also reminds me, just a real quick Sundance story. There is a, I think it was my first year, because I was actually, my first year I volunteered at the library versus the Egyptian, where I spent the rest of my years. And it's also as time of recording right now, Sundance is happening and I'm not there. And that's really difficult. It's the first time in 19 years. Well, the second time that I haven't been there. This time wasn't by choice. It was because there is no Sundance Film Festival in person. Mm-hmm. It's all virtual because of the pandemic. Anyway, so that got me emotional right there. But then I remember there was a movie, I think it was called Better Luck Tomorrow. I'm not quite sure, but I watched it and it was the same thing. And it was a lot about race, stereotypes, racism, things like that, and very controversial at times. And so I was an usher and I was listening to the Q&A and the same thing happened. Someone asked a question, a really direct kind of racist question, and one of the actors grabbed the mic and got really upset and was like, you know, went at him, and then it became like this kind of shouting match, and a couple other of the actors started talking, and then someone else jumped up, and then this someone, a really established press person, he grabbed the microphone. He was a person of color, and he's like, hey, here's my perspective. And it became this moment, and I was like, whoa. And it was in the news because the press that was there wrote about it and had this big, giant discussion, and almost like, it wasn't a fight, but it was an argument for sure. And it got pretty heated. And I was like, whoa. And so, of course, the movie got all this buzz. And then we hosted the movie again, like the following week, because they start to play movies over and over. And at the end of the movie, someone gets up and asks the exact same question. And the exact same fight happened. So it was actually all planned by the film team.
Wow.
And that actually, I had such a weird reaction because at one point I was like, this is pretty genius, but also kind of weird.
Yeah, that it was staged.
That it was all staged. Now, when the reporters got involved, that was not staged.
Okay.
So there was live feedback that always happened because of this staged incident.
Yeah.
But the catalyst, the one question and that argument and attacking and the... And so...
Oh, that's fascinating.
And then since I am me, at the end of the movie, I said something. I went up to one of the actors and the guy that fights back. And I said, oh, you know, I really like this movie. And he's like, or I saw him out in the street. And I was like, I really liked your movie, you know. And he's like, wow, did you stay for the Q&A? It got really heated. And I'm like, well, yeah, we've actually shown it twice. So I've seen that Q&A twice. And he kind of went, oh, okay, well, cool. Glad you like the movie. Talk to you later.
You're like, yeah, I saw your performance, your after film performance twice.
Yeah, you're a good actor.
Oh, wow.
So that's I kind of just busted him, but it's not like, I guess I'm telling it now, the story. But it's not, you know, when you get a movie at Sundance, you got to make moves. There's all kinds of things you have to.
To stand out.
Yeah, to stand out, get attention. I mean, Blair Witch Project did it. They made that movie act like it was real missing persons. Mm-hmm. And this was found footage. And that's how it got it into the limelight. And it's not like that's necessarily a bad thing. They didn't, you know. So, you got to do what you got to do. I thought it was super interesting. And, you know, I'm sure there were people that thought the exact same thing that person said. So it's not like they, you know, and maybe that gave someone that was thinking that silently, gave them a little bit of a voice and then that counterpoint, which was more important. Mm-hmm. So, you know, no harm done, but it did remind me of that. I always, now whenever I see Q&As at Sundance and I see a ton of them,
where people
I'm always
arguing,
a little bit like, is this real? Is this not real? What's real? Is anything real?
Yes, yeah.
So anyway. All right, I better get to my last cool sheet. It's another fun, nostalgic one from my childhood. It's an article. It's called 16 Amazing Facts About Sea Monkeys. So sea monkeys also were really popular when I was young, and I always really, really wanted to get sea monkeys. The name, the little people in the on the picture were so interesting. And for whatever reason, my parents were like, you're crazy and you're not getting sea monkeys. And so it made them like more magical and mythical because I could never have them. And then I don't know how I got down this rabbit hole the other night, but I got upon this article and I'm so glad I did because there's these 16 facts that I never knew about sea monkeys, and I'll list some of my favorite. They were inspired by a visit to a pet store. So in 1957, Harold von Brahat was fascinated with a species of brine shrimp that was sold in a pet store, and he decided he wanted to make these things and call them sea monkeys, even though they're brine shrimp. And they were first advertised in comic books, probably where I saw them. And they actually, that species of brine shrimp does not exist in nature. So Von Braten and Di Agostino crossbred this shrimp until they found a hardier species that could last, because their average lifespan was only a couple months, and that wouldn't work for a pet. So they crossbreeded them, and it took years until they got them to have about a two-year lifespan. And then that's when they really started to market them as these sea monkeys that we know and love. And they're still around, which is surprising to me. Not quite as prominent, but still out there if you want to get some. They breathe through their feet, which is incredible. They also are born with one eye, and then they develop the second eye later in their lifespan. They're attracted to light. They're not harmful to the environment, so they're not an invasive species. You can tell a male sea monkey from a lady sea monkey because males have whiskers under their chins and females don't. They launched them into space. They've been referenced all the time in pop culture, and there was even a TV show called Sea Monkeys starring Howie Mandel. Surprisingly, it only lasted 11 episodes. Definitely check out this article, 16 Amazing Facts About Sea Monkeys. I mean, if that's not a cool sheet, I don't know what is.
There was a
sea monkeys, man.
Series. Oh, that's funny. Oh my gosh. I totally remember Sea Monkeys, and I have not thought about Sea Monkeys in so long. It's so funny. So my memory is of that cartoony picture of there's like a king sea monkey and a queen sea monkey and the baby sea monkeys. And for me, there was definitely a fascination, but there was also kind of like a creepy factor. Like I remember just staring at it and going, there is no way that these actually exist. Yeah. Like, what are
and
these things?
They look nothing like this caricatures.
Who, like, who drew that? It's just
Which
so
I also love.
Funny.
And they're not monkeys. They're not.
No, no.
They're shrimp.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, everything about it, I think, is hilarious and wonderful. And yeah.
It is. And it's so 70s. Yes. Well, I guess, well, wait, was it 60s? I guess
well,
60s, 70s.
Well, 57 is when he went to the pet store. But yeah, maybe 60s. Yeah. 60s and through the 70s and, yeah, through the 80s.
And because well, when apparently.
I
was,
and still now. Yeah. I found him on Amazon. Now, the article also talks about the actual science of how they can like live in this essentially like almost crystal form. And then when you give them water and certain nutrients,
oh, wow.
How they then actually come alive. Like that in itself is fascinating. Mm. I went more on the humor side of some of the facts, but the actual science behind it was like way cool. So it's worth checking out
wow.
this article.
Yes.
And
yes.
To learn
I
more things about them.
Oh, I love it. That's great.
I never thought I'd do a sea monkey's
no.
cool sheet.
Oh, that's great. Okay, well, I'm to my last cool sheet, and I'm calling this a kind of crafty science. This is invisible ink. All right, so back in the day, hey, let's go back to childhood. And when I was a kid, the way that you made invisible ink was that you took lemon juice and a paintbrush and you would paint your message onto a piece of paper with lemon juice, let it dry, and then you would have to take your paper and hold it, hovering it carefully over an open flame, over a candle, and then warm it up and not get too close, of course, but then wherever it got hot enough, then it would change into a brown and then it would reveal the secret message. Okay, well, that's really cool, but it's kind of a pain and you have to have some dexterity there. And it is not kid friendly, clearly, and you definitely don't want to leave your kids alone doing that. Okay, so what I have recently discovered is another kind of invisible ink that I can envision kids doing and it being really awesome. I could also envision doing a scavenger hunt for a friend. I really love doing that, where you do this, where you leave like there's a secret note and then you say, okay, and then here's the developer and then they have to like reveal the message and super cool. And the way this works is that all you need is baking soda in water and that's your paint. So once you dissolve some of it in there, you paint your message on white paper, let it dry, and it's going to be invisible. And the developer that you use, all you need is turmeric, the spice, in alcohol. And so just rubbing alcohol. So just you put a little bit in there and then you can, if you don't have like a big paintbrush, you can just use a paper towel, dip it in there, wipe it over the whole paper, and it's going to turn the letters this deep, vibrant, earthy red. Will be your letters, your message. It's so awesome. It's so simple. It's non-toxic. No flames required. Invisible ink.
Wow. So this is kind of a nostalgic episode. I love it. I should have that as our keyword, but I don't always know how to spell nostalgic.
Yeah, that's true.
But I love this. So invisible ink is another thing that I was always so fascinated with a kid. And it, like sea monkeys, I was deprived as a child to never get any of these things. I had it so rough. Boy, oh boy.
You did. I feel really bad for you.
You should feel, everybody listening should feel so bad for me. Never got sea monkeys, never got to play with invisible ink. But now,
Brian,
I can.
You can do this invisible ink.
That's
you have
so
everything.
Exciting.
Because I bet you
the world is my sea monkey.
The world is.
Okay. Yes, obviously I'm kidding. I had a very fortunate life, and I still do. But I do love all of these cool sheets. This
too.
Is a really fun episode.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to check out our show notes at 10bestest.com/reads. and stay curious.
Want to learn more about this week's cool sheets?
Head on over to 10bestus, that's 10bestus.com, for links to all of our cool sheets.
And sign up for our monthly newsletter with bonus cool sheets and other fun stuff.
10 Bestus will be back with an all-new episode next Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern.